ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुर्मिलितं येन वज्रे श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुपीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामायां ददाति स्वापदान्तिकम् ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नाम्ने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी पुजारिणे निर्विशेषाशून्यवादि पश्चात्यते सुधारिणे वंशकल्पतिभ्यश्च विपदसिन्धुभ्येन च पतितनां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्रीद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम So much could be said about Srimati Yamuna Devi Dasi. I'll just begin with my personal association with her. In October of 1970, a group of disciples from America were going to India. And on the way we met Guru Dasini Muna and Malati and Shamsunder in Belgium. They had arranged a cheap flight for us on Bosco Airlines, which I think had only one aircraft. And it was not a passenger plane. But they put in seats for us. And so our group arrived in Brussels, frankly. And we were brought to an apartment. And in that apartment, Jamuna and Guru Das and Shamsundar and Malati were sitting. And just walking in the focus and devotion for Srila Prabhupada were so palpable. It was like walking into a different atmosphere. And I met four devotees extraordinarily attached to Srila Prabhupada, and each very capable in serving him in different ways. So then we flew to Bombay via Cairo, and in Bombay we were taken to Kailash Acharya's house, which Srila Prabhupada arranged for us. And there I went through a period of, I don't know if you'd say confusion, something difficult for me to deal with. And I wasn't sure what to do. And I was a relatively new devotee compared to the others. And I just got the inspiration to go into Jumun and Guru Das's room. And what happened there was something revolutionary. I went in there feeling completely, I don't know what to say, but at a loss. And they just turned the whole thing around that I had come in to engage them in thinking about important topics, and thinking about Srila Prabhupada, and like Srila Prabhupada had sent me, and it was like they just turned the whole thing completely around. And I believe they were completely genuine in the way they took it. And that was the beginning of what proved to be a very close relationship with both of them. During that period, Srila Prabhupada introduced a new tune for the Guru Vastakam prayers in the morning. I don't remember if he tried to instruct as I recall, he did try to instruct one or two others, but they couldn't quite get it. And then he chose to instruct Jamuna in the presence of all of us. But she picked it up right away. And then gradually we began to learn that melody. From Bombay, we were invited to attend the Vedanta Sammelan in Amritsar. And during the day, when there was some free time, which wasn't that common, but in the afternoon, there was free time, she would place herself in the courtyard, and it was very cold in Amritsar in November. But it'd be a little warmer when the sun came out in the afternoon, and she would just sit cross-legged with her back straight and chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra Japa continuously with her eyes closed non-stop. And she mentioned to me that when she chanted, her ears and mind and heart just opened up, and the holy name would enter, and she would hear the sound. She'd be fully absorbed in the sound without even thinking that she's chanting the holy names or these are the holy names, but just absorbed in the sound. And there were only two ladies on the party, Shimon and Koshari, and Srila Prabhupada was very protective of them. Then from Amritsar, the group was taking a train back to Bombay, and on the way it stopped at the Delhi train station. And a very a peculiar man. D.D. Gupta met Srila Prabhupada at the station and asked if he could lead some disciples in Delhi to begin the mission there. And so Prabhupada asked Gurudas and Yamuna to get down. They discussed forming a party, and so they asked for me and a devotee named Gopal and a devotee named Bruce, Bhakta Bruce, who was now Ramaswami. So Prabhupada said, see what you can do. And the whole mood in general was very much like a family, but especially those days, we had these two rooms, very basic, bare rooms. There was like a courtyard in the middle, and it was near Delhi Gate in Old Delhi. And Mr. Gupta was an advocate, but not a very big one, I don't think. Very miserly. He would keep all his used batteries in a drawer. On occasion, he would invite us to his apartment, which was heated and was, you know, comfortable compared to where we were staying. We would see all his old batteries. He was waiting for them to come back to life. He was waiting for all his dead batteries to come back to life. Anyway, it was very austere, but it was very nice being with them. And then Prabhupada went to from Bombay to Indore for the Gita Jayanti Mahotsav, and he asked our group to join him. So we went, and when we came in the room, Prabhupada was sitting at his desk, and he looked up. And Yamuna said, Srila Prabhupada, the way you're looking up from your desk reminds me exactly of a picture of your Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, looking up from his desk. And Srila Prabhupada replied, all that glitters is not gold. My Guru Maharaj was like gold. And like iron. Then from Indore we went to Surat, of course, a tremendous reception. And in Surat, something I had thought of this for many years. There's something. Well, I was chanting, you know, chanting. And somehow my mind got fixed on the idea that I heard Srila Prabhupada say that if you deliver just one soul back home, back to Godhead, then your deliverance is assured. And somehow I was thinking of my girlfriend from before I joined, and I was thinking, you know, maybe I should have her come, you know, make her appear devoted and deliver her, and then I'll go back to God. So it all really made sense. But I thought I better consult Gurudas and Yamuna. So, you know, I approached them, and, you know, I was very serious. And particular. There's so many souls that you could do with your hand to them. Why her in particular? And basically, they got me to overcome that. Strategy. Then, from Surat, we went to Bombay, stopped over in Bombay, and not the whole group, but a smaller group came ahead. We were staying at the Sea Palace Hotel, which belonged to Ramchandra Chabria, who knew the devotees from England. And while we were there, a new issue of Back to God had came. And at the front it ran Srila Prabhupada's poem, Marking Bhagavat Dharma. The poem he wrote when he arrived in Boston. And we had never seen it then. It had never been published. And Yamuna Devi, the three of us got together, Gurudas, Yamuna, and I. And Yamuna was reading it. And then at the end, Srila Prabhupada writes, "Signed, the most insignificant beggar." And for the whole poem is written in a mood of a great humility and dependence on Krishna. And when she got to that point, she just like burst into tears. More recently, I think within a year, well, maybe 2 years, she wrote about her celebration of one of the holy days. I mentioned that incident. Maybe it was Srila Prabhupada's arrival in America, or this is appearance day or disappearance day. She wrote back that she had sung that song, that poem, and she had cried profuse tears the whole time. And then she wrote, "That is my weakness, tears." Then we went to Allahabad for the Ardha Kumbh Mela. And there, Srila Prabhupada was speaking about Ajamil, the story of Ajamil from the sixth canto. And the story was completely new to all of us. I think we only had about this, published only about the second canto, the beginning of the second canto. And I heard that Srila Prabhupada had said that he was speaking specifically for Jamuna. So, in 2007, when Jamuna came to the Santa Barbara area and visited us, I asked her about it. And she said that this is like sort of a theme, that Srila Prabhupada was completely aware of every disciple in every detail, both their internal consciousness and the external manifestation of the service they performed. So she said that she was very hungry, very eager to hear. And Prabhupada knew that, and because she was so eager to hear, he became eager to speak. Now, up until then, she didn't really distinguish, like in terms of etiquette, that, you know, men should walk, you know, closer to Prabhupada and women should walk further, or men should sit closer to Prabhupada and women should sit further. And the movement was sort of like that. It was very much like a family. And in Allahabad, our god brother, Chitananda Swami, spoke to Jamuna and said, do you notice how the ladies are sitting in one section and the men are sitting in one section? And do you notice where you were sitting? And, well, I mean, things are different here. It's India. So, previous to that, she would always sit right in front of Srila Prabhupada, and he would see her when he was speaking. And that day, he didn't see her. And then later, anyway, when she was sort of passing by his tent at the Kumbh Mela site, he called her in and said, so, you don't like to hear me anymore? And she broke into tears because she described it, you know, Prabhupada was everything to her. Hearing from him was everything to her. Then she explained, and he said, where were you? You know, and she explained. And Prabhupada, you know, sort of acknowledged it silently. And she said at that moment, she had a realization that changed her whole orientation to Krishna consciousness. She had the realization that she was not always going to have Srila Prabhupada's close personal association. And she thought of 1967 when Srila Prabhupada had the stroke in New York City and he almost left his body. And later he said it was the devotee's prayers. Krishna heard the devotee's prayers and said, all right, let him stay continuous nonsense. So at that time, it occurred to her that we're not always going to have Srila Prabhupada's personal association. But then when Srila Prabhupada came back, it's like everyone was so happy. It's like they forgot. Like, oh, Prabhupada's back. He'll be with us forever. And so, but this second incident in Allahabad made her think that she has to prepare. And she has to find some way of continuing in Krishna consciousness, which is not based on Srila Prabhupada's physical association. And that became a major theme for her in her life, beginning then, but it wasn't, didn't seem like so much of an issue when Prabhupada was with us and he seemed to be in relatively good health. And then after he left, it was a very big issue. Vani and Bapu, and how to body to the same degree and with the same intensity as in his personal presence, close personal presence. And she was convinced that it was possible, as one of the other speakers said, that Prabhupada's guidance and Prabhupada's mercy was available to anyone who wanted it. It was just a matter of the individual positioning himself or herself in such a way as to receive it. Anyway, things continued to sort of taking a little grain from each place, and we went to, well, I went to, yes. So then there was a Bombay Pandal, and Shamsundar Prabhu was the temple president of Bombay, and he divided the organization into different departments, and one devotee was in charge of each department. And he was the department. And so she was in charge of the deities. And we had very little money, but we were raising money for the panda, but we needed it all for the program. And the treasurer, Rishi Kumar, was very tight with the money. I think that Prabhupada considered that a good quality for the treasurer. Sometimes he'd like put a sign up on his office door, you know, closed for 3 days. This was not available. And in any case, she was charged with raising the funds for the deities. And that was the year that we got big marble deities. I mean, in the panda we had brass deities, and then in the end, on the last day, there was a procession from the panda across Maidan to Chokhari, to the beach, and then there was a program at the beach. That's when Radharas Bihari was first revealed to this. To the people of Bombay, so she just couldn't raise the money. So one day, she was so distraught that she wasn't able to raise the funds for the deities. She just like sat down on the side of the road and was weeping. And as she was weeping, sort of black, sort of like a limousine, you know, some distinguished aristocratic pious gentleman in the back seat noticed this American lady dressed in a sari crying by the side of the road, and he told his driver to stop. He got out of the car and he approached her and asked her what was the matter. So she said, "We're having a pandal program, and I'm in charge of the deities' outfits and ornaments and decorations, and I have to raise the money, and nobody's giving money, and we're running out of time." And he said, "Oh, don't worry. I am the chairman of the two biggest temple trusts in Bombay. The Bombay Devi Temple Trust, maybe Mahalakshmi, two of the three biggest. So don't worry, just come with me to my office." He said, "How much do you need?" She said, 2,500 rupees, which was a lot back then, really a lot. He said, "Don't worry, you come with me to my office, I'll give you a check for the whole amount." But she was that sincere and dedicated. then from Bombay, Srila Prabhupada sent Kamal Krishna Goswami to Calcutta to arrange a program there. And then she came, and she was very much involved with the deity worship, Radha Govinda. She was, I mean, people, anyway, we'll sum it up at the end, but so she was doing the deity worship. It was beautiful and wonderful. And one day, when the curtains opened, a devotee noticed that Krishna's flute was in such that the holes where his fingers would play the tune were where his lips were, and the one hole where he would blow into the flute was on the other end. So a devotee mentioned it to Jamuna, and she said, I'm going to yes, yes, I'm going to go Krishna, Krishna can perform the functions of any part of his body with any other part of his body. So the devotee didn't like that answer. The devotee thought, you know, she made a mistake and she's making light of it. So the devotee went to Prabhupada and told Prabhupada what Jamuna had done. Prabhupada replied, Angani Yasya. So then from Calcutta there was a Delhi Panchal. Again, beautiful deity worship for those deities who later went to Bhaktivedanta Manor, Gokulananda. And but afterwards she became very sick. And she was staying in a house with Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada noticed that she was missing. And he inquired and found out that she was sick. And she was just like in a little room, you know, like a closet. Because they were, you know, she needed her own room because she was very sick, and that's what they had. So Srila Prabhupada went to visit her. And he found that no one was really taking care of her. And he became very concerned, and he assigned a devotee to take care of her. And it was cold, and I think he gave his own room heater for her, his only room heater. And he said that we have to take care of our devotees when they fall ill. Then after the Delhi Pandal, I went to Madras, but the rest of the party went to Vrindavan for the first time. And there is one car, ambassador car, with Srila Prabhupada, and then a bus with the rest of the devotees. And Prabhupada was in the car with, I guess, four or five other men. And he noticed Yamuna Devi climbing into the bus, and he said, wait, and he called her because he knew she was very sick, and he told all the men to get out. Then he had her get in the back seat. Prabhupada was in the front seat with the driver, and then he fit in maybe two more men, which would fit in the back seat with her, and then the other men went on the bus. Then Yes, Vrindavan. Speak a little about Vrindavan. Yes, when we got the land here, Prabhupada got the land, he put Gurudas and Jamuna in charge. And there were a couple of incidents that she related to me that I considered to be very instructive. Once, a small group of devotees went to the Radha Damodar temple. And the Goswami in charge of the temple invited them to have prasad. So the devotees were sitting in the courtyard and the Goswami arranged for mana prasad for them. And while they were honoring prasad, he began to blaspheme Srila Prabhupada very badly. Saying why does he wear a ring and just all sorts of things. And it was an extremely uncomfortable situation. And the devotees were really tempted just to get up and walk out. But somehow they decided not to. But after the incident, Gurudas and Jamuna reported to Srila Prabhupada what had happened. And Srila Prabhupada said, in Vrindavan, there are 5,000 caste Goswamis, 5,000 shopkeepers, and 5,000 widows. And we have to keep good relations with all of them. Otherwise, we will end up in court like the Gaudiya Math. Then, another incident, and by the way, this is not a comment on the present situation of the Radha Damodar Temple, is that there are other factors involved in that, not our. Anyway. On another occasion, they sent Prabhupada and Gurudas and Jamuna to meet Professor O.B.L. Kapoor, which Srila Prabhupada's elder brother. And Professor Kapoor, at some stage after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur left, he had taken shelter of a Babaji as a Shikshamuni. Now, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had very vehemently criticized these Babajis, and they had very staunchly opposed Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So this was a very peculiar situation that he had taken shelter of a Babaji who was so, very much the type of person who was the object of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's criticism, and who in turn opposed Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Srila Prabhupada simply said, that is his weakness, and that was all. In other words, he didn't consider that to be a disqualification for Dr. Kapoor's helping the movement. Prabhupada had a very broad view of the Krishna consciousness movement and engaging people in it. And that was demonstrated very vividly in Vrindavan. Anyway, then Prabhupada left. Things did indeed change. And I didn't see Gurudas and Jamuna for quite some time. But then somehow that early relationship with Jamuna was revived. She was really sort of a mentor to me. There was one other occasion when I had some questions that I just could not answer regarding my own future, the future of the movement. And it was during that Calcutta pop-out that I confided in her, and I just couldn't get the answer to those questions. And, you know, the whole mood was, you know, don't disturb Srila Prabhupada, you know, don't go to Srila Prabhupada. You know, he has to translate, he has other things, don't go to Srila Prabhupada. So I explained the situation to her. She said, well, you should go to him. You're the type of person that he would want to spend time with. And these are the types of questions that he would want to answer. So that was very significant. I went, some of his answers, the author, been guiding me ever since. One question was, because before I joined, I was sort of interested in making movies. I wasn't sure which career to pursue, psychology or filmmaking. So I went to Srila Prabhupada and I said, you know, before I joined, I had some experience making movies, and I was thinking, maybe I should make movies about Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada replied, there are others who can do that. Now, the only one who was doing it at the time was Damodar in New York. Anyway, so there are others who can do that. Our main medium is books. And then I said, Srila Prabhupada, now you're here, and everything is all right. Things are up to the standard. But what about in the future, when you're not here? What if ISKCON falls from the standard? Then what? And Srila Prabhupada replied, you are also one of the important members of the society, which I was really very new at the time. But anyway, you are also one of the important members of the society, so you work for the correction, but don't leave. So these two instructions, have been guiding me ever since. And it was really Jamuna Devi who sort of told me that I should go and ask him. So then, many years later, we met again, and it was like the same. The relationship hadn't changed, although so many years had passed. And we shared thoughts about Srila Prabhupada and his service, about the mission. He's always very concerned about the mission, that Prabhupada's legacy should be preserved as it is and not adulterated or compromised. And I saw that she was very absorbed in Krishna consciousness. You know, when I think of these five main items of devotional service, Panchanga Bhakti, she was very strong in all of them. She was very strong in reading and studying. She would spend hours every day reading Bhagavatam, and especially the books of the more recent acharyas, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and especially in relation, she would make special note when they spoke about the holy name. This is very, very big focus for her. She would just relish reading, and especially their instructions related to Nam Bhaja. Deity worship, we all know. But one other thing that I noticed about her that was amazing. This was during the time of the first Bombay Pandal, when we had the Akash Ganga apartment. Maybe it was after the Pandal, before. But she would stay back and clean. It's like she would clean the whole place for hours. And while she was cleaning, she would be singing in a very ecstatic mood. And it was just extraordinary. And we would come back and she would be, you know, we would be going here and there. Of course, our focus was service, but there were incidental benefits, seeing exotic India, meeting all sorts of nice people, tasting varieties of delicious prasad. And she was just staying back and cleaning, and she put her heart into it. And singing in a deeply ecstatic mood. And later I asked her about it that time when she was in Santa Barbara. And she said that in the early days of ISKCON, Prabhupada emphasized Bhagavat Marg more. Because he wanted his books produced so that they would be there for all time. And he wanted money to come in from the sale of the books, which would support the expansion of the mission. And he didn't have much time to train disciples personally in Pantra Chiking Vidya. But he did train her. And she considers personal service to him in the same category as personal service to the deity. And she's actually right. Because once a devotee came forward to fan Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada stopped him, saying he wasn't a Brahmin. So, she, and cleanliness, that cleanliness, it's one of the basic principles of deity worship. And she didn't distinguish between, you know, cleanliness in the ashram and cleanliness in the deity room. And in that exchange in 2007 at Carpinteria, she said that cleaning is extremely potent. And that external cleaning, that cleaning externally, also cleans the heart and cleans you internally. And she said, as much as book distribution, that it's extremely potent. And she said how Prabhupada would train disciples in cleaning. He personally trained her in cleaning. Of course, there was the cooker, the three-tiered cooker. But in general, she said, if there was even a tiny spot, tiny black spot, Prabhupada would really chastise her. we should use the word whipping. He would really chastise. This is not Vaishnav. This is Muslim. I'll be respectful. So that was, and so she developed a whole system of cleaning. And then there was also cleaning Prabhupada's quarters. And she would clean the quarters. There were like five steps she did that divides the procedure. She would like start at the bottom and go up and clean. And then she would start again at the top and go down and clean. And everything perfect, as perfect as she could get. But if there was anything wrong, Prabhupada would notice it and tell her about it. So one day, and it was a very hard job in Vrindavan because you had the hot sands of Raman Reiki, and plus this was a construction site, so there's so much dirt everywhere. And at that time, there were, I guess, carpets or cushions in Prabhupada's room, and then on top of those would be white sheets. And she had to keep everything spick and span. So he came back one day after she, you know, did her five-phase cleaning, and everything looked like it was sparkling clean. He called her in, and, you know, he was looking at the items on his table. There are a limited number of items, his eyeglass case, a few items, and a stapler. So, first he said, Jamuna, you haven't cleaned my rooms today? Haven't I taught you how to clean? I said, well, please, Srila Prabhupada, I'm ready to be instructed. Please tell me how I can clean. So he opened up the staple gun, and there's like a little, I guess like a cage or something that the staples fit in, and then you can lift that up, and then there's like a little surface under the holder where the staples are. And then at the back of it, there's a hinge that holds it all together. So there was some dust at the hinge. Prabhupada put in his little fingers, pinky, and ran it along the hinge. And said, there is dust there. So, I mean, so I think, yeah, that he Prabhupada could reciprocate. He knew the consciousness of everyone, he knew their capacity, and he would train them according to their capacity to absorb and cleanliness. And she related that to Mantra Tricky. I guess she felt that, well, she said that if Prabhupada had the time, he would have wanted to train all of his disciples in that. But again, because of limited time and energy, he focused more on the Bhagavad Mark and the book production and distribution. So, so I guess coming towards, oh yeah, that she had a very deep, do we know what this humming is? Is there anything we can do about it? Is it from here? Do you hear that? Oh, the electricity. Okay. It's beyond our control, right? Okay. She had a dream, and I don't remember the details. Something I might want to try to clarify.
I think it's here. Have you been chanting on the platform over the road or something?
No. Oh, what is that? If you want to speak to Swamiji, Janaki Devi wrote me this nice letter where she had a dream that there was a gigantic platform above the surface of the earth, and all of our devotees, our god brothers and sisters and you, were assembled on this gigantic platform for Sankirtan. And we had such a thunderous joy, magnificent, joyous, magnificent kirtan that the whole earth, when you said, Jai Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa, the whole earth bowed down to you like this. And we were all crying, so happy. And you said, now my Guru Maharaj is satisfied. That was the dream. Prabhupada said, thank you very much. Yes. Thank you for your dreaming like that. It is very pleasing to me, yes. Yes, I want to see like that.
Guy.
Well, the one I was going to tell, and it is a little delicate because she was a very private person. Anyway, in this dream or vision, whatever it was, she took it as very real. And I don't remember the details, but she was like a sage in the forest. And Srila Prabhupada was also in the same forest. And there was some connection where he engaged her doing kirtan. And anyway, she felt there was something from the past life between her and Srila Prabhupada in relation to kirtan. Of course, I mean, she...
So I think I'm going to
read a few things. We're sort of coming inevitably towards the end of her stay with us. I'll read this one. This was something she wrote to Bhakti Carl in an email. It was the same, coincidentally, she spoke with me the same morning, which she also mentioned in the email. And she wrote, leading and chanting in kirtan has little to do with how we sound to each other. It has much more to do with how we call out to Krishna and immerse ourselves in hearing the vibrations of the holy names. What a vehicle for experiencing love of Godhead. When she was recording with the Beatles, George Harrison, you know, was very impressed with her singing, and he said that if she stayed with him, he could make her a recording artist, and he was confident that she would be at the very top of female vocalists in the world if she stayed and worked with him. But you know, she was not interested because her singing was for another purpose. She wrote me on after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day in 2009, about 2 years ago. And it shows her absorption in Srila Prabhupada, in the holy names, and also her intimate relationship with Srila Prabhupada. I think it is true that she really did understand Srila Prabhupada and his mission. He gave a lot of instruction to her. Dear Giriraj Swami, Pranam Dandivats, Jai Srila Prabhupada. Wanted to share a few thoughts and reflections on yesterday, Srila Prabhupada's 32nd disappearance day. We observed the day first at Radha Banabihari Mandir with our morning program at Radha Banabihari Mandir. Then at a midday program at Govardhan Academy.
That's the school at Sarnathi.
The school at Sarnathi. Introducing the students to the traditional way Srila Prabhupada instructed us to honor this day. And then in the evening program with adults in the community, who for convenience regularly meet in the evening for Vaishnava holy days. Last night, Yadavara showed his preliminary edited footage for DVD 11, Srila Prabhupada's Final Pastimes. Though I had seen much of the footage before, it was without comment and not arranged in sequence to tell a visual story of Srila Prabhupada's final days and hours, the moment of his passing, and the aftermath of the Vrindavan Parikrama and Samadhi entombment. Then she recalls, one evening, sitting with my back to Srila Prabhupada's front bucket seat, riding in a van from Chittenhurst, that was John Lennon's estate, to a Conway Hall lecture in London. Srila Prabhupada said loud enough for me to hear, "When I die, see that my body is taken on a palanquin around Vrindavan on Parikrama." Stunned, but immediately attentive to these words, I turned around and on my knees bent forward from the waist so that my head was even with his shoulder. I said, "Why have you told me to do this, Srila Prabhupada? Better that you tell to Mount Krishna. He has more access to seeing that this is done than I do." He replied, "No, you can tell him." He fell silent and said no more. I too fell silent and said no more. Yadavara's footage last night of the thickest pastime of Srila Prabhupada's life with us, his passing, was poignant and moving. Though I was not there physically with Srila Prabhupada, I could not have felt closer to him, nor had more of his presence had I been so. This is coming back to Vani and Vani. Every moment of every day was a meditation on Srila Prabhupada. And we were engaged in a constant kirtan. Perhaps it would have been difficult for me even to be there at that time.
For except Pishima, it's clear that women were not allowed close proximity to Srila Prabhupada. And that might have been almost unbearable for me after the closeness I experienced in previous years with him. Anyway, she speaks a little more. But this was also a concern of her, how at a certain point the role of women in the movement changed. In earlier days, of course she was exceptional, but she would lead kirtan before thousands of people. She would speak before thousands of people. And that personal service, like she said, at Tiffenhurst, she was basically Srila Prabhupada's personal servant. She and Malati and Janaki. You know, Purusha Tom would do some of the correspondence, and some of the men would give massage, but basically they were doing the personal service. And she said, one day Prabhupada came into his room, and they, I guess, had just made the bed and just done whatever needed to be done in the room. And he said, this is very unusual, meaning for a sannyasi to have women do that. He said, this is very unusual, but it's appropriate. And he said that sometimes I'm like your father and you're like my daughters. And sometimes you're like my mothers and I'm like your son. So, anyway, the last year, there was a lot of concern about Mother Jamuna's health, and she's at different stages. She spoke to me about it, but then very much towards the end, maybe September, she came to a very critical point in the assessment of her heart. And because of her size and her age, the doctors were afraid of an invasive procedure. But at the same time, if they did nothing, there was every likelihood that she would have heart failure, and that could come at any time. And for a little while she wasn't sure what to do, and then in the end she just decided to go back home and depend on Krishna. And she said a few times that she's ready to go. That she feels that she's done what she was meant to do in this life, or what she could do, and she was ready to go. She had no fear at all, and no regrets. So, well, I didn't like that conclusion for my personal reasons. I said, well, you know, you may have something left to do in terms of your service to Srila Prabhupada. I was thinking write, because I really wanted her to write about her experiences with Srila Prabhupada. She said, no, I've thought about it. There's nothing really that I have to say to do. If there's anything, it's to try to help the women in the movement. She said, I don't think you can understand as a sannyasi what the women in the movement experience. But if at all Krishna gives me some more time, I would like to stay and do something for the women, to support the women, to give a strong voice to the women. She was like, she's so Krishna conscious, like, no matter how dire her physical condition was, and some of these conversations, well, they were fairly frequent from the time she went to Bhaktivedanta Hospital. It was just natural. It's like we begin talking about her body, and somehow or other, it's like, without knowing how we got there, we're talking about Krishna and Prabhupada and the holy name and how wonderful devotees are and how merciful Prabhupada and Krishna are and how grateful she is. It's sort of like the reverse of what I experienced with myself. I begin talking about Krishna, and then somehow, I don't know how it happened, I'm talking about my body. And with her, it's like, I bring up about her body, and when it, you know, try to see how she's doing, if I can help in any way. And without knowing how, suddenly we're talking about Krishna and Prabhupada and the holy name, and the prayers of the acharyas, and the wonderful service of the other devotees, and just how grateful she is for what she's been given. So, in conclusion, I will quote from a letter that she sent me some years ago, which has, you know, given me some solace, and guidance at this time. She wrote, I remember when Dina and I visited you in your house in Vrindavan. We asked you one question, and you took 3 hours to answer it. Very slow. Here's the question. How has your relationship with Srila Prabhupada changed since his departure? Again, it's Vani and Bapu. Then she writes, the departure of loved ones helps us to change, to go deeper. Surely this will happen. So, for me, this is her, I take this as her specific guidance at this from a certain point of view, calamitous juncture. I'll just read it once more. I remember when Dina and I visited you in your house in Vrindavan. We asked you one question, and you took 3 hours to answer it. How has your relationship with Srila Prabhupada changed since his departure? The departure of loved ones helps us to change, to go deeper. Surely this will happen. Srimati Yamuna Devi Jasi Ki Jai.